On this episode of the Autumn Windbags, we discuss whether the Super Bowl coming to Las Vegas can help out new Raiders fans. Should Divine Diablo be calling out teammates because he is a rookie? We talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly from the Chiefs demolishing the Raiders last week. And will the Cleveland Browns even show up with so many COVID issues? And we love when you subscribe, rate, and comment on whatever platform you're listening on. All right, here we go.
I got a dream of winning a Super Bowl. I got a dream of being in a Pro Bowl. I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares. The Raiders!
Caught! Touchdown! Raiders!
You're listening to the Autumn Windbags, an audio attack from the Silver and Black. Here are your windbags, RJ Clifford and Juan Soto. Yeah, it is another episode of the Autumn Windbags. RJ Clifford, Juan Soto, let's have some fun today. Freezing cold day in Long Beach today.
Jesus, I went to work this morning. It was 37 degrees.
I had frost on my windshield, and not like the, oh, it's kind of like, you know, wet and a little icy. It's like, no, like windshield wipers didn't work. Had to put on the defroster for like a good 5 minutes. Windshield wiper one, psh, ice down. Now the rest of the country's listening to this like, so Long Beach, rare occurrence.
Super cold.
Very rare occurrence.
So I had a friend from high school that went to college in Chicago, and he was like, oh, you don't know what cold is. I'm like, listen, bro, you being in Chicago does not make me feel any warmer. So you can save it. I feel the way I feel. That's that. I'm the biggest cold baby, too.
Chicago, top three cold I've ever been. I would say most cold, Winnipeg. Winnipeg, Canada. Because it's like North Dakota. It's freezing.
Yeah, I was in Rochester, Minnesota, which is like maybe 100 miles from the border.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the coldest. It was like minus 10 or something like that. They had to send us a video. Like, anything on your face that wiggles, you got to cover it up. Like, when it gets below zero, you got to cover everything. And we're like, huh? Like, yeah, frostbite sets in like a minute. Like, wait, what? Yeah.
You can't do like deep breaths, otherwise, like your lungs will freeze.
It's like if you chug a beer too hard and like you hurt your chest. It's like that's what I feel.
Basically, as cold as the Raiders' rushing offense,
or the offense in general.
To be topical. Jesus. Yeah. Well, some good news for Las Vegas. Las Vegas is going to host Super Bowl in 2024. The Super Bowl was supposed to be in New Orleans, also an amazing place to host a Super Bowl. But because of a 17-game season, it got pushed back 1 week, which bumped into Mardi Gras that year. So, like, screw it. We'll give New Orleans another one. We'll move the Raiders. Because you knew the Raiders. You knew that the Super Bowl was coming to Las Vegas sooner rather than later. Yeah. And it just came, like, sooner rather than normal.
That's like it's going to skip a year. But 2022, the draft is there. Then 2023, nothing. And then 2024, we get the Super Bowl. That would have been a party, though. Imagine Super Bowl and Mardi Gras. Oh, my God.
The city would have been burned to the ground. Like, everyone who went there would just die of alcohol poisoning. Or even just, like, just out-partied. Like, the autopsy's just like, oh, what was it? Drugs, alcohol, too late, STDs. He tested positive for partying.
Right? You partied there, right?
One time. Only one time. I had an amazing time. For a fight, it wasn't for Mardi Gras, it wasn't for a bachelor party. It was just a bunch of my college buddies were like, let's go to New Orleans. We've never been before. We all went, had a great time.
It smells like barf, huh? When you're walking around, you're like,
I guess in the summer, the smell gets way worse. For obvious reasons. We went like early spring where the weather was nice, like I wore just like a t-shirt and jeans, but it wasn't the like beating down muggy hot. Like, it was a good time to go. Highly recommend it.
I almost like tore my knee apart. I stepped in a pothole that was like obscenely deep. I just didn't see it. And I thought I blew my knee out. I thought, I was like, oh shit, there it is. I'm going to spend the rest of my trip in the fucking hospital.
That's one of those injuries that you explain to your coach. You're like, oh, I blew out my knee. Oh, you're training in the off season. No, I was hammered at Mardi Gras.
Kinda.
Stepped on a pile of drunk chicks and blew up my ACL.
I didn't tell him I was training for Beer Fest.
Yeah. So what do you think this will do for Raiders fandom in Las Vegas? Because, we're both in Southern California, but I'm in Vegas every weekend. Like, I'm not exaggerating, like just, at least three weekends a month I'm out there, and I see Vegas signs everywhere, Raiders hats, Raiders jerseys, No joke, an Uber driver that picked me up last week, just like a few days ago, he had Raiders face mask, Raiders dice in the mirror, actual dice, but with the Raiders logo on. That's pretty sick. Raiders seat covers, Raiders license plate cover. Like, he was all Raidered out. And it was funny because I walked in and was like, yeah, Raiders had a tough one last week. Kind of. He's like, I don't even want to talk about it. And spent the next 30 minutes just talking Raiders about the entire time, right? But even with, like, and I'm, even with what appears to be like a big fan base in Las Vegas, they can't sell that place out with Raiders fans. It's just all away teams. Not all away. That's unfair. But like, teams that travel decent travel fantastic in Las Vegas, and we just can't get a decent home game.
I mean, it's the nature of the beast. We talked about it in the preseason. Once the tickets go to sale, and once you get to the resale, because you know, you see those, you see it with anything that's like shoe drops, anything, and tickets, concerts, the bots are going to get a bunch of it. And once the bots get it, they don't care who it goes to. I just want your money.
Yeah.
And you know, it's a good destination to go because there's a ton of stuff to do other than the game. And that's part of one of the prerequisites of destination cities for watching your team play on the road. And yeah, man, it's been pretty rough the last couple games at home.
Well, you know, it's a combination of, you know, all the things that we mentioned, right? Like, if you're an away team and you know, you see Las Vegas on your schedule, if you're Pittsburgh or Cleveland or Cincinnati, like, that's where you want to go, right? Like, it's such a great destination. And you have all the casinos buying up season tickets to give to high rollers, right? Like, that's why they want them so close to the casino. Like, they literally are making that stadium, makes it as impossible as possible. That's even a phrase, as impossible as possible to keep people from driving in. They want people to go through the casinos to get there, right? To spend money and all that kind of shit. So a lot of things going against them in that realm. But I feel like Vegas is like a city full of like your girlfriend's a Raider fan type Raider fan. Like, if you ask them, like, yeah, I'm a Raider fan. Look, here's a jersey. And like, I root for them. But they're not like a hardcore fan base. And I get it. They've been there a season and a half. But they're not like a fan base that's, you know, there come hell or high water, knows the Raider chant, which isn't overly complicated. And yet, like, Graphic Raider, who came on with us, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago, whatever it was, it's like, yeah, like, they don't even know that. So, like, they cheer really loud when the Raiders are on offense. It's like, I feel like it's, I hope that the Super Bowl can bring kind of some, like, veteranship to the Raider fandom in Las Vegas, like, kind of let them realize like what real football's like, just not the game itself, but the hoopla that goes up to it, right? The months and months it takes to plan, the weeks and weeks that media is there and the events are going on, and just kind of like just a real injection of like the highest caliber level of football, you know, maybe like a learning lesson for our Las Vegas brothers to learning how to be Raiders fans.
It can work either way, man, because if you have a city it doesn't have that strong roots in rooting for a team, I can almost guarantee you 99.99999 could be there for 30 minutes saying percent that the Raiders aren't going to be in the Super Bowl in 2024. So when the NFL pumps up the Super Bowl and advertises the Super Bowl that year, it's going to be the two teams that are in the Super Bowl. So if somebody is going to get some fandom for the teams that are playing in the game, it's probably going to be one of the two teams. Now, if they get hooked on the actual game itself and want to watch games live, then yes, okay, then it would in subsequent seasons maybe increase the fandom of the Raiders.
Realistically, what are the Raiders' shot of being in the Super Bowl in 2 years? Because look, there's only 32. Come on. Teams have been in last place and gone to Super Bowls in two seasons. It's happened multiple times, right? There's 32 teams in the NFL, thing is, right?
Those teams have had more stable front offices and head coach and coaching. We're basically starting just so from
negative. If
I had to put money on it, I would put money against us being in the Super Bowl.
I'm curious what the odds will be. They don't release Super Bowl odds two seasons ahead ever. No, right? It's always one ahead.
It changes too much, man.
We'll have better odds than the Jets, than Jacksonville, than Detroit. Like, not again. Not
well. Those guys are 0-2. Those guys are 0-2. But okay, they're not going to make it. I can tell you right now, they're not going to make it.
It'll be what, 200-1, something like that, 150, something like that.
All your money. Give me that money. I'll give you those odds.
I might take it. But getting you to pay your bets is like trying to like squeeze like oil out of a stone. You have to like, yeah, you act like you do me a favor when you finally like don't belch on the bed.
You like that?
Oh my God. No, I don't. Not at all. I there's few things I disrespect a man more than welching on a belt.
I didn't welch on it. I paid up.
Hit on my wife, kick my dog, rob my house. Be like, eh, that's kind of low, Soto. You're like,
I've done literally almost all of those.
Yeah. And you welch on a bet, then I'm pissed. Please, guys, like, comment, subscribe. Likes down here. Oh, no. Subscribes over there. There comment down there. All those good things. I'm going to get it eventually. This new camera I have is mirror image.
Yeah, mine's fucked up.
You know what I'm saying? Or it's not mirror image. It flips.
It's so, flipped. Like, totally that's what, but I want to like, oh, wait, there we go.
Yeah, I'm not used to looking in it. Like, I feel like I'm looking in a mirror, but like my hands are going opposite. It's super weird. Yeah, that was no fun for anybody. So Divine Diablo, great game in his first start, right? He played a little bit 2 weekends ago, like 12 snaps or something. And because our linebacking core was freaking decimated, he actually started for us as weak side linebacker. Had a really great game. We'll get to his specifics a little bit more in the good, the bad, and the ugly. But he was pretty vocal at the press conference. Take a listen.
Personally, I feel like a lot of people would just, lack of better terms, fold. They'll just lay down and come to practice, not ready to practice. And I know I'm a rookie, but I don't want my teammates to do that. I'm going to make sure they're ready to practice. And we bring that intensity every day.
So nothing too crazy, right? He didn't go on some tirade, didn't drop a bunch of F-bombs, but I think the most vocal we've seen probably out of anybody. And again, rookie, first game starting. So the question is, this will be our pinned comment on the vid, comment on it. Should a rookie be calling out the rest of the team, right? Because we've talked before, who are the guys should be vocal? The guys that either are amazing, good, balling out, or the hardest workers, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know what level of work Divine Diablo is. We haven't heard like, oh, his work ethic is legendary. We certainly haven't heard anything like, oh, he's a piece of shit in the locker room. No. Seems to be kind of an average guy, right? Certainly balled out.
Yeah, we haven't heard anything. So it's
Heard nothing from him, right? Like we thought like, okay. And this, like this was such a great opportunity for Divine Diablo because generally when rookies don't even get playing time, you're like, okay, it's because they suck, right? Like the coaches are afraid to put him out there.
No, Perryman was falling out. That's why he
Right? didn't run. But with like Gwit, you know, getting hurt. Now he's on IR off and on. And, you know, it seemed like they'd give him some like decent reps. They never did until now. And it turns out we got ourselves a baller. Well, here's the question. Should Divine Diablo specifically or rookies in general be calling out the rest of the team?
I don't have a problem with it. You're taking players who have been winners and the best players on their teams coming into the NFL. They understand what it takes to win. They understand what it takes from a team for a team to be a winner. And if they don't see that, I don't subscribe to this. Oh well, these are grown men who have families, and you know you can't talk to them. Like no, you can challenge them. You can challenge their manhood. You can challenge their dedication. You could challenge that. I don't have a problem with it. You know, there's a kind of a school of thought out there that, oh, if someone's doesn't make more, is not as successful as you are, you shouldn't take any advice from them. Only take advice from people who are more successful than you. Like, wait a second. You can learn something from everybody. Everybody can teach you something. If you just gotta pay attention to what the person is saying and process the information. So I've never discounted anyone who's talked to me, from a guy on the bus to a guy I've worked with to a boss to anyone. If someone wants to tell me something and give me a piece of advice for whatever reason, I'll think about it. And sometimes it's bullshit, and sometimes, you know, you get something out of it. So I don't have a problem with a rookie or anyone else calling on a team.
To your point, a homeless guy was the guy that taught me about the brass monkey. The 40-ounce of Cobra, and you just drink the neck and fill the rest of it with orange juice. It was a homeless guy. Was at a liquor store? And I walked out with a Cobra. He's like, oh, you're making a brass monkey? I'm like, no, is that what homeless guys call 40s? It's like, no, you drink half the neck, fill the neck with orange juice, and it's amazing. I was like, oh, went back in, bought an orange juice, and said, high five, homeless guy. You made my life better. Thank you.
Hope you keep your toes. It's fucking cold out there.
I'm kind of with you. Like I said, Divine Diablo wasn't ripping anyone specifically, wasn't throwing out F-bombs. It was just like, look, like when I see guys fold, like we got to practice better. Because normally we've been hearing like practices have been going well. Games have just been shit, right? This is the first time we've kind of heard, all right, maybe practice, at least from one guy's perspective, a rookie's perspective, maybe practices aren't what he wanted them to be. The other flip side could be too, in college, like you practice a lot. In the pros, with the Players Association deal, you never practice.
Most of your practice is mental.
Yeah, like our high school football, like double days and like practicing every day, film every weekend, like those, that's not the NFL. Like you don't, all it's individual. Like you hear like the super hard workers, it's all individual workouts, right? So maybe it's partly that. If I'm, the big question is like, look, if I'm Brandon Parker, I'm hearing that. Hopefully I'm taking it to heart a little bit. If I'm Darren Waller, Casey Hayward, you know, Derek Carr, if I'm like a leader, like, you know, Pro Bowler type guy, what am I thinking? If a rookie who's played, who started one game is saying like, look, this team fell flat. These guys folded. You take it to heart because it's a new voice, or you're kind of like, fuck this scrub.
If you're just up your own ass, then you just tell them now, whatever, it's a rookie. But if you're actually somebody who wants to get better and who's determined to win, yeah, you'll take a look at it and you'll first internalize it. Say, okay, did I do everything right? Am I doing everything I can do? Okay, I'm fine. Okay, who are the people around me that I need to lift up? And that was my big problem with Max Crosby when he was saying, oh, I don't want to say anything when I was a rookie because I was just a, like, no. You're telling me that Ray Lewis, before he stabbed everybody in the fucking Ybor City in Florida, when he came into the NFL, he was quiet? Mm-hmm. You know, like, no, he's a leader. He goes out there and he leads. Just because Divine Diablo didn't get a chance because he was switching positions and we had veterans that the defensive coordinator liked a little bit more, in the position to start off the year, but now he's the end of the year. He's probably going to start the rest of the season. So it's not that he's a bad player and he can't play or he doesn't work hard. It's just he wasn't in a position to play because he couldn't show what he could do in games. But now that he has, I have no problem with him saying anything.
It's when people come down on you, you're not mad when they're wrong. You're mad when they're right. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So like, you know, I've been a radio host for over 10 years, right? When listeners are like, you know,
you got a face for radio.
I have a voice for radio. I have a face for newspapers. There's a difference. When people would like wanted come down on me for a segment or something and be like, RJ, you're a stupid poopy face, or like just like an insult, it's water off a duck's back. It's like, there's nothing there. But if they're like, RJ, Matt Hughes fought Carlos Newton twice in the rematch at UFC 34, and you said UFC 35, you're wrong. Those are the ones that get me. Like, damn it. I should have looked that up. You're right. That's what hurts. And so if you're practicing on the Raiders and you're going kind of flat and you're not giving it your all and you feel like you folded, what Diablo said is going to get you. What Diablo said is going to get you right in the heart. You're like, oh, he's saying what I know to be true. If you're a guy that's busting your ass and doing your best, you're like, okay, you know, go ahead, Rook. Like, you know, you're right. Like, this team's got to do better. I think it comes down to that. I think individual players will take it kind of based on their own individual situation.
If I'm Corey Littleton, I'm like, fuck. Because
he beat himself up this offseason. I think Corey, like, as like we want to hate him because he's paid so much and playing so poorly, but he's at least never been the guy that's like, no, it's the team's fault, or I'm playing great, or I'm just not getting set up, or, you know, it's the coordinator's problem. He's like, this whole offseason is like, damn it, I got to get better. He didn't.
He's gotten worse.
Yeah. He's like, he didn't, but at least like,
look, man, I think you care more about the mindset. I care more about the results. Like, I don't care about your mindset. You could be an asshole. You can be a jerk.
I'm 90% results, but like mindset gets you to results, right? Like it's
not necessarily
not with Corey Littleton.
If you're not as good a player, if just not that good.
But he is that good. He was that good on the Rams.
He doesn't have the defensive line in front of him making the plays easy for him. He doesn't have that here. That was my big concern when we got him, is he doesn't have probably the best player, offense or defense, in the NFL playing in front of him getting triple teamed. Every single play.
And that's a factor for sure. But he also like misses tackles on the Raiders that he didn't miss with Raiders, right? Like open field, like his coverages when he was covering a tight end or whatever, like with the Rams, he was better than he was. Like you're right. Like those are elements. Like he's just not on as good of a defense, but individual, like one-on-one performances, he's been off too. Anyway, that's the question of the day. Should a rookie be calling out the rest of the team? We will pin it in the comment section. Leave your comment. I'm very curious what all y'all think about that. Now that we're done with that. The good, the bad, and the absurdly ugly from the Raiders' loss to the Chiefs, 48-9 on Sunday. Kind of even on elements, good, bad, ugly, that I'm seeing on your rundown, Soto.
But I really tried hard, man.
Certainly the uglies and the bads sting a little bit more. Let's at least start positively.
We're going to start with the good like we always do. Woo! The good. Hummer Renfrow, friend of the program.
Whether he knows it or not, his name is Hummer Renfrow, thanks to Rory.
Hummer Renfrow. He speaks to Queen's English, too. He should have better pronunciation. So Hummer Renfrow, 13 catches for 117 yards and a touchdown on a sweet little fucking quadruple move.
Three straight games of 100 yards receiving for Renfrow.
And 10-plus catches.
Yep. Fumble lost was one downside on that.
Yeah, what are we going to do? This is the good. We're talking about. We'll get to that later.
Stay positive, Clifford.
Yeah, geez. Talk about me being negative. Josh Jacobs receiving. 5 receptions for 46 yards. So it's just over 9 yards of reception. Definitely needed out of the backfield. Normally when we get a little swing pass or a check down, it's like maybe a 1 yard gain because we get tackled. He was actually making people miss. He had a little bit of room on a little swing pass in the third quarter where he gained, I think, about 15 yards on that play.
It's so nice because we were forced to go to him a lot, obviously, with Kenyon Drake on IR and Jalen Richard on COVID, right? Is he going to come back? I'll look that up. Is he supposed to be back this week for COVID? But yeah,
I want to see Regis, see what Regis can do.
Yeah. Well, like we have like maybe the bet, like two of the most expensive backup receiving backs in football, and they're both out. At least Jacobs is able to kind of fill that role when needed.
Yeah. Moving along, Divine Diablo, the aforementioned Divine Diablo had 10 tackles, led the team, 5 solo tackles. And he's just all over the field, man. He's all over the field. He was in every single play. And he's looking like he's going to be a leader on this team if he keeps going with the headspace that he's in right now.
Yeah, it's now the real question is now that opposing offensive coordinators are like, oh, this guy can kind of ball. Are they going to start? Is he going to be like part of the game plan moving forward? Because when he comes out of nowhere, rookie, right? Like no one's accounting for him, you know. And then now let's see if offensive coordinators account for him and see if his play still hangs.
Yeah, you know, you call specific plays or draw up specific game plan plays to put him in a compromising situation. Then we'll see how he reacts. But, I mean, all good so far. Your best friend, Jonathan Abram, also with 10 tackles, 4 solo. We'll get into the other stuff later.
Yeah.
New to the program, Malcolm Kuntz. He had a sack on only 15 snaps. He had a sack. Now, that may not seem like it's a big deal, but like normally a guy plays like around 60 snaps a game. That's like 4 sacks a game. And this is
at this rate, he's going to have 70 sacks this season.
Right.
Remember that that Simpsons line where Disco Stew is trying to, is that a the
Disco job Stew fair? Doesn't advertise.
he's at the job fair and he's like, disco balls from 1967 to 1971 have increased by 300%. At this rate, we'll all be billionaires. That's kind of how I feel about Malcolm Kuntz.
He's showing what he can do in limited snaps. We are picking and choosing when he comes into the game, which is smart because we're not putting him in a position to take on double teams or, you know, jumbo lines or, you know, tackle eligible, stuff like that. That's it for the good. Now to the bad.
Okay. Fun part.
Our defensive and offensive game plan and our in-game adjustments, I didn't see a lot change from a philosophy standpoint. One thing that I did see a little bit different in the second half towards the middle of the third quarter was Derek Carr more in the shotgun. Mm-hmm. That's that's where he was most comfortable in college. That's when he was most comfortable in his best season with us in 2016. That's when he's been the most comfortable and looked at the best earlier this year. Was he was in Shaka and he was doing those false snaps and he was waiting for the defense to react. He would check to a different play. I don't know why we got away from that, but that's really our best chance to move the football, to get Derek Carr in the shotgun and have him, you know, survey the defense, get them to react, get them to flinch on the on a false snap and go from there. But unfortunately, we kind of just did more of the same throughout the entire game and it just didn't get any better.
As far as defensive adjustments, this was a flashback for me. One of my one of the guys I work with is a lifelong Chargers fan, right? Like, had season tickets ever since he was a little kid. And we were talking about Gus Bradley coming over, and I'm like, yeah, we got Gus Bradley. Can't we guys let him go? Like, the only reason your defense sucks is you had all those injuries. And he's like, Bradley, he doesn't make adjustments. Like, he has his defense, and if it works, great. And if it doesn't, he just sticks to it. Like, that's the negative to the positive of a simple defense, right? Young defensive players play fast. Don't overthink the defense. Just play. There's no perfect strategy in football, right? There's no perfect strategy. Everything you do has upside and downside, right? And so having a really simple defense means the Andy Reid's of the world and the Patrick Mahomes of the world and the Tyreek Hills of the world are going to dissect it, figure it out, and shove it up your ass. And that's what's happened to Gus Bradley's defense twice. It's just, I saw a stat where it's like something like teams run two high safeties like 70% of the time against the Chiefs. And that's why the Chiefs offense has sputtered the last three quarters of the season. The Raiders were in two high like 18%. Like, Gus is just like, nope, I run my defense.
That's not what I run. That's
it. We're not going to overcomplicate it. And this is the absolute ugly side of a simplistic defense.
I mean, having Gus Bradley on the team this year, coaching the defense, was a good thing because you actually saw players play in a system that they can perform well in. And then you can see, okay, who are the players who can play and who are the players that can't? Jonathan Abram, okay, we see where you can work. We see what you can do. We see where you're really deficient. Okay, you have, a Nate Hobbs or a Divine Diablo. Okay, we got some real guys, Trevon Merrick. Okay, great. Okay, these are players. Littleton, yeah, you got to go. Like,
yeah.
Now, because it's kind of like a litmus test. Okay, let's just make it very simple and easy. Vanilla defense. Let's see if you can play.
It doesn't handcuff your studs, but it exposes your weaknesses.
Yeah. Moving along with the bad, Foster Moreau. He had three catches for 13 yards and three drops.
Some bad drops.
Bad drops.
Drop that turned into an interception.
One of them to an interception. There was a fumble. The fumble by Renfro. No, it wasn't by Renfro. It was by Zay Jones, I believe.
There are so many fumbles. I can't keep them all.
Yeah.
I can't keep them all in my head.
Zay Jones fumbled, and it's like, I even told you, it looked like Foster Moreau wanted no part of that football.
Yeah.
You know?
Moreau's been a real disappointment this season.
Yeah. He's been targeted six times, and he got three catches for 13 whole yards, and he had three drops.
I could not have been more wrong about how I thought Moreau's season would be this year. I thought he'd be, oh, dude, we got him and Waller. Put them both on the field. You know, Waller ever gets hurt, we're good, dog. We're fine.
Nope.
Off year, or maybe this is just who he is. I don't know.
He tends to play better when he's more like a Darren Waller. When you get him out in space, that's when he seems to be a little bit, when he's the traditional, you know, runs the traditional tight end routes, he's not as good. Corey Littleton, we talked about him a little bit. Corey Littleton was looked at with our best player on defense, Denzel Perryman.
I was so jacked when we signed him. I was so pumped.
Yeah, and he was looked at as someone, this game specifically, to really step up and help this defense because, you know, Denzel Perryman was, okay, Littleton, you're the next guy up. Like, you're the guy that's making all the money. You're the guy that has all the hype on him. Let's see what you got. He played all of 19 snaps. He had one tackle. That's it. For $15 million, that's what we're getting.
Oh, no. He played 19 snaps or all but 19 snaps?
No, he played 19 snaps. That's all he was on the field for. And that's, I mean, for $15 million, he's getting paid almost $1 million a snap.
Not a bad gig if you can get it.
Yeah, right? Our third down offense, we were 4 for 11 on third down, which is not good. And our third down defense, Kansas City was 9 for 13 on third down. So, yeah, not very good.
Offense is off the field fast. Defense is on the field forever.
Some of those were like third and longs too, like third and 12, third and 15s, and they were just picking them up like no problem. All right, that's the bad.
But that's the worst of it, right? It can't get possibly worse than that. Obviously,
it might.
No way. Wait, there's more.
We might have a little bit worse.
More.
We just might. We're going to the ugly here. Our ball security was absolute caca. Started with Josh Jacobs in the first play carrying the ball away from his body. Zay Jones carrying the ball away from his body. It just was an orchestra of just bad.
When Hunter Renfro is fumbling, you know the whole team is off. When like Captain Surehands is dropping balls, you're just like, okay, something's in, like they had a bad like pre-game breakfast or something. Like something was up. That was so bad. That was Josh Jacobs' first fumble of the season lost. First lost fumble of the season. Like he's generally, you know, I've been pretty hard on Jacobs. Ball security has been a good asset of his. That's generally a strong point.
He's fumbled a couple times that he was able to drop on it.
It's also a regression to the mean, right? Like remember earlier in the season, we had like 9 fumbles, but recovered all of them.
Yeah.
We're like, okay, that's awesome. I'm glad that's happening.
We recovered 8 and 1 was knocked out of bounds, but.
We retained possession on all 9 fumbles. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's cool, but that's not like a skill of ours. That's just dumb luck, and it's gonna go the other way eventually down the season. Of course, at least it happened in a game we had no chance of winning, right? It didn't happen in a close game. Our regression to the mean.
Oh my god, it was just terrible. I was texting because I was a little bit ahead of you guys.
No, I was same as you. I was watching
Rory. Yeah, Rory was behind me. I'm like, oh yeah. By the way, we fumbled again. Like maybe like 5 minutes. I got more like 2 minutes ahead. The decision to meet at midfield pregame. Just again, I'm not big on motivation. I don't think that it really works, because when you fumble on your first play and the defense returns it back for a touchdown, there goes your motivation.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not a big proponent of hyping yourself up and pumping yourself up and like false confidence. I'm just not a big proponent of that. My fucking cat's fucking around over here.
Well, look, it's desperate times, desperate measures. I mentioned in the post game show, try something, anything. Like if it blows up in our face, all right, we're 9.5 point underdogs. Like whatever. Clearly, this is what blew up in their face. All right, that didn't work. We're never going to do that again, hopefully. That didn't pan out well.
I mean, what's better than someone talking shit and then you beating them and being able to say, what was that again? What were you saying earlier? Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying.
Nothing better.
You raise the stakes, right?
Yeah,
you raise
the stakes. Better after the fact. There's nothing better after someone had already talked shit. That's better than talking shit and then doing what you said you were going to do. Even better is you beat them and you're able to throw it in their face.
So why is Floyd Mayweather and Conor McGregor the biggest selling draws in combat sports? Because they raise the stakes because they talk so much trash, right? If they win, it's like, oh, they backed up everything they said.
They're also good. And they're also really they're also good.
But if they lose, the stakes have risen, right? There's guys that are better than, there's 100 fighters better than Conor McGregor. No one sells better than him because he raises those stakes. Now, this isn't prize fighting. Like they don't care what the ratings are. But it goes to my point, like you said, when the stakes are risen, whether because of you or because your opponent from trash talk, makes your win feel that much better and your loss hurt that much more, which is what I love about sports. Just not what happens to us.
Yeah. All right. Our defensive effort late. We allowed a backup offensive line, a backup third string, I think, running back, to go untouched 51 yards for a touchdown. I had no idea. Yeah. I had no idea what this mother, what I thought it was Frank Gore. I had no idea who this guy was. And I'm like, okay, who's this guy? Derek Gore. Huh? What the hell is that?
Frank Gore stopped boxing training for one game just to play the Raiders because he knew he'd get 50 yards and a touchdown.
Dude, it's like,
sign me for a day.
This guy's 27 years old. He's not a rookie. He's just a practice squad guy who's bounced around from team to team who just happened to land on the freaking Chiefs. And they activated him because they didn't have any running backs. That's who scored a 51-yard untouched against our defense and a backup offense. Yep. That's that's inexcusable. And that's the ugly, everyone.
The good, the bad. And boy, was it ugly, Betty.
Yeah.
That ugly was like shaving a dog's butt and telling him to walk backwards. Ugly.
Mm-hmm.
Real ugly. All right. Well, let's turn things around. Raiders versus Browns. Mm-hmm. Not this Sunday. On this Saturday. We got flexed to a Saturday game, which normally I love, right? Like if I love being Thursday night football, Thanksgiving game, Saturday game, because both teams have the same short week, but we in our next game get a long week. So normally it's great. It's even better for us this week because every single person on the Browns has been sneezing in each other's faces. Everyone's literally got COVID.
Spitting in each other's mouths.
Everyone's got COVID on the team. The coach, Baker Mayfield, half the offensive line. It's nuts. Like this,
the receivers,
like all their assets, like all their best players, all in COVID. Now, as of right this second, we're recording this Wednesday night. The game is still on. I think the NFL, I think last season they gave NFL teams because COVID was a little newer. Remember how there were so many games? They didn't cancel a single game, which is kind of crazy to think about. But they would push a lot of games back, right? They
We got like Tuesday, Wednesday games sometimes.
Play games, let guys kind of, get out of COVID protocol, stuff like that. I feel like the NFL is like, nope, you guys, we have vaccinations now. You've had a whole season to learn how to do this. We're not, nope. We're not canceling games.
Yeah, we gave you a bigger practice squad. We gave you like different practice squad rules now. So,
COVID IR.
Yeah, we got you plenty of chances to be able to make this work.
So the list currently, Baker Mayfield. So that means Case Keenum would probably be the backup. It went bad. The coach. John Johnson, safety, cornerback Troy Hill, defensive tackle Malik McDowell. That was added today, Tuesday. Jarvis Landry, guard Wyatt Teller, tight end Austin Hooper, left tackle Kendrick Willis Jr., Tech McKinley, punt returner JoJo Natson, backup guard Drew Forbes, reserve tight end Rob Travis, all placed on the COVID injured reserve. Now, some of these, so there's still variables in play. If these players can submit two negative COVID tests between now and Saturday, they can play. The other caveat is, does the NFL push this back, right? Like I said, I doubt it. They're kind of like, all right, guys.
They already said they won't.
You should have figured it out. Well, if guys keep losing, you know, or if they keep losing guys, it's not likely. So. It's not likely. But, I mean, even best case scenario, half the starters aren't getting a week of practice. That's if they all come back and if they don't have a coach.
Mm-hmm. I mean, do they count day of tests? Like, is that enough time to be able to say you can play? If probably, not, then
the morning test, maybe.
Okay. So then they
test should be able to.
They have 3 days then. They have Thursday, Friday, and Saturday to test, and they have to do two in a row. So,
the Monday, Tuesday guys, if they submitted negative tests like today, right? So it's like, it's a whole wave of guys, right? A whole
Friday
bunch
of the day. Monday,
a bunch of Tuesday, a bunch of Wednesday.
Friday the day. If you pop dirty on Friday, you are done, my man.
But this is the other part of it. Is a whole slew of guys, a whole new wave of guys going to test positive tomorrow? That's the other thing. Like, it's not slowing down. It's not like a whole bunch of guys tested positive on Monday and then it's been like no one's tested positive since. It's every day this week, a whole slew of starters have tested positive.
Mm-hmm.
So this could get worse going the other way. Better for us.
That's crazy. Worse for them. Yeah, it's crazy, man.
What are those guys doing?
They just I think maybe they're just close talking. You got a bunch of close talkers over there.
So it's also weird, like the false positives and stuff. So like when I got COVID a year and a half ago, I got COVID while working at the UFC. I took a UFC COVID test, so I wasn't able to work the next day, the whole thing. My very first, the test I took the day before was negative. That was the Thursday night. Friday night test came positive. And then I took three more tests every single day. And I took five tests in 5 days. They went negative, positive, negative, inconclusive, positive, and then I didn't feel symptoms until the fifth day. Like, that's how weird and wild this is. Like, you know, for people who haven't had COVID or aren't that full up, like, all these, like, positives could be weird negatives, or it could be like me, where it's just, like, developing slowly. It's not an exact science. Like, they try to make it exactly, like, oh, you're positive, okay, 2 weeks. It's like, it's not that. Like, it's all over the place.
Yeah. I had it too. That shit was ass.
I'm too strong. I didn't have it that bad. I had four days. It just kind of like
terrible.
Yeah. I remember you had to do the show. You did shitty.
I did.
You're playing hurt. You had turf toe. You had turf lung.
Right. Turf lung. Head. It was pretty bad.
But honestly, right. how much does their offensive game plan really change, right? They want to just run the ball, right? Just gonna, either way, they want to run it up our ass. Like, here's our so here's a look on the breakdown. Now, this is how both teams have played, you know, with all of our starters, right? As it's normally going. But you can see, obviously, like, the Browns rushing attack, 144 yards per game. Awesome. Raiders rushing defense, 125 yards per game, 26th. Bad. I mean, the game plan is clear, right? Our rushing offense, terrible. Their rushing defense, above average. Mm. Our passing offense, amazing. Their passing defense, terrible. Like, it's them running it down our throats and us slinging pigskins is more or less what the game's going to be, regardless of who they've got under center.
Yeah, and one thing you have to look at, too, is Kareem Hunt's been out most of the year. Mm-hmm. And Chubb's been out quite a bit of the year too. They had Dearness Johnson, who had a couple of really killer games in his stead. So it's not just, they have this two-headed monster, because they haven't had Kareem Hunt for a long time. He's out again with COVID, I believe. And Chubb hasn't played every game either. He's been out a couple of games as well. So it's just their scheme, their offensive line, and they have three talented running backs there.
Case Keenum had the line of the day. Browns Case Keenum on the opportunity to play with Nick Chubb. Having a full Chubb back is really going to be good.
Buzzing. Back there.
Having a full Chubb back there is going to be really good. See, that makes it even worse. Like, that's just like saying, like, oh, having a full Chubb is good. You're like, yeah, you know, I'm getting up there in age. It's nice when you're like, you know, when it's diamond hard, you know, it's like, okay, that's good.
Easy.
I drink a lot, you know. Oh, having geez. A full Chubb back there. Okay, Case.
Well, yeah, that's what you like.
I also wonder, like, if in the Browns locker room, all the Chubb jokes have just been recycled 1,000 times, and then Case Keenum's like the unfunny dude that says the inside joke like 9 months later, and now we all find it funny. Case Keenum feels like the guy that would be that.
That's like going down to the octagon, and your like walkout song is like Gangnam Style. It's like it's old, bro. It's way past.
Well, it's like the line, like, every time I'm doing something non-MMA related, but I'm like the MMA fighter, and I mess something up, I say, oh, I get hit in the head a lot. Sorry, guys. And everyone's like, oh, that's funny. Like, that joke's been made a million times in mixed martial arts. Like, that joke's been done a million times, but it's new to you. So I'll snag it and use it. There's a lot of great Chubb jokes, too. I would kill it in the Browns locker room. Boner jokes
for a day or two. Easy. For a day or two, and then
because you're in different situations, you know. Like you know, like, you're in the showers, like, oh man, I can see your Chubb from here, you know, things like that.
No,
back from injury, full Chubb.
Full Chubb.
No, come on.
Oh man, I don't know.
All this negativity has made you not funny anymore.
That's a little lowbrow for me.
Oh, stop it. Mr. Highbrow. Sorry, I can't see your joke from my monocle. I'm too highbrow. My top hat is covering my eyes. I can't see your joke.
It's true.
My cummerbund is too tight. I can't breathe and laugh at your joke because I'm too highbrow. I'm the Monopoly man. I'm Juan Soto.
That's his name.
Highbrow. Come on. The random memes and jokes and shit that you send me and recycled from Instagram every day. I know exactly how high or low your brow is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not very prominent.
It's a dragon.
So that's the Browns on Saturday. 1:30 on the West, 4:30 I won't be able to do the post game show because I'll be working. So hopefully we'll get Rory to fill in for me. You and Rory will handle post game duties.
If not, it's just me.
If not, it's just you and the listeners. So coming with a lot of questions.
Yeah, come with a lot of questions and all that.
And try to be positive because otherwise we know how negative Soto wants to be. And we got to try to like spin some positivity in this show, try to keep it fun, you know? Otherwise, you're just gonna be wallowing in filth. Like I get all sharp objects we got to keep out of your office on Saturday because I'm not there to chipper you up.
I'll figure something out. Yeah, get some M&Ms or something.
Ready to do some what up winbacks?
Oh, you know it.
VL8962. I've never seen an organization live off of its past success for so long while milking its diehard fan base for every cent we have. Facepalm emoji. Mark has to go. The NFL wants it. The fans want it. Lots to digest here. It's true. If you're like 50 and older, Raiders to you means winning. It was like the most winning franchise in sports. Like it meant winning on the biggest stage, winning at all costs, just win, baby, playing hard. That was the brand. And it was well earned. And honestly, it was earned so well that it still kind of lingers today, even though obviously the recent play doesn't mirror it. But because the Raiders were so badass and powerful in their prime, even decades later, it still kind of lingers, right? It's still part of the culture. It's still part of the idea, even though the play certainly doesn't compare to it. But that's been like, there was a Ryan McKittle, who we had on our show, who's a Las Vegas radio host. He hates the Raiders history because that's all they've been really pushing as soon as they moved to Vegas. It's like, look at our history. Like we got John Gruden who won the Super Bowl and the Raiders have this great legacy because they can't sell recent success. So they're selling history. And like that's again, we were talking about Las Vegas earlier in the show. You know, Las Vegas, like their hockey team went to the Stanley Cup first season.
They only know winning.
Mm-hmm. And there's such a rabid fan base for the Golden Knights because you're coming and you go straight to the top out of the gate is essentially an extension team. Okay, we get it. But you know, like the Raiders kind of milking their past success. It's like, what else are they going to milk? Like you sell what's sellable. That's the only thing really marketable about the Raiders. John Middlecoff had on his podcast today was talking about how the Raiders need a rebrand. New colors, new look, new everything. I'm like,
hell no.
No way. The Raiders have one of the most, and that's the problem is like, expanding the Raiders brand, expanding the Raiders fan base is going to be hard when they lose. But there is such a die-hard fan base that through the last two decades of losing have stuck by, been loyal, and are still diehard. Like people talk about like, oh, the Steelers have such diehard fans. The Pats have such diehard fans. No, they don't. They have fairweather fans, but the team always wins. That's why they have diehard. Try being Detroit. The Lions have diehard fans. The Raiders have diehard fans. Don't give me this like, oh man, the you know, these Rams, oh, that's diehard fans. Like, they won a couple in St. Louis. Like, that's it. Like, they're not diehard fans.
Mm-mm. Hell no.
Do you want Mark Davis to, like, take away the plausibility of it happening? Do you want Mark Davis to sell the team?
Yeah.
Because it's part of it's also devil you know versus devil you don't. Like, it could be another Dan Snyder buying the team or some like foreign conglomerate buying the team or like someone doesn't give a shit about someone that would rebrand the Raiders, right? Like that's a real possibility. If Mark Davis sold it to just some random billionaire that doesn't care about football, he just wants the prestige of owning an NFL team. Cause I'm with you. Like obviously he hasn't ran a great team, but could it be worse? Could it be like the few things that still hold strong for Raider Nation, a new owner would just piss all over it. Cause he doesn't care. He just wants to look at the bottom line.
But could it be better?
That's why I asked. Do you roll those dice? I don't know.
We've seen who he is now, and he has to get really lucky and change a lot of his tendencies for us to go in the right direction.
Paige Pelican, after listening to Jacob's name drop Kirby, it sounds like he's really missing his running backs coach emotionally, mentally, and in terms of in-game decisions. You think that's the case?
I just think that he.
I can never gauge have a lot position coach. With. Yeah. I can never gauge position coaches and their relationship with their players. Cause that's such a like deep down, right? Like you gotta be like in practice to see that. It's hard to see it from the outside. You're not going to see it in games. You're not going to see it in press conferences. You know, you kind of have to like almost be there. Cause I've had a ton of coaches in my day, right? Whether wrestling or football or MMA. And some of them, they were my coach. And when I don't need them, I don't care about them at all. Some of them are my best friends to this day. And it varies, right? Like I can't explain why some of them are that way or the other. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Cause Josh Jacobs, he hasn't played great since he's been on the Raiders, but this has been his worst season. Is it just O-line or do you think something's going on in between the ears?
It's possible. I mean, I said it last episode, you could be the smartest guy in the room, but if you can't communicate to anyone, it doesn't matter. You can be a great running back coach, but if you can't get across what you're trying to tell Jacobs, you can't get him to understand what you're saying and to apply it, it's not going to work. Maybe Kirby was just somebody who was able to communicate with him a little bit better and a little bit easier and kind of make things make sense to him a little bit easier.
Last one, Masked Man 23. Be a great porn name. Masked Man. Mark Davis is no Al Davis. I didn't mean to crush Mark Davis and what a winback just ended up that way. Mark Davis is no Al Davis. He should have had a potential replacement for the head coach without a crisis forcing it. He blew the rest of the season, putting Rich Bisaccia in as interim coach. Masked Man, I can't disagree with you more. Mark Davis's mistake was the 10-year contract for Gruden. Once that was done, you're not planning on replacing him. Like he had 7 more years on his contract. That's the one job in that building where you're like, okay, I don't have to think about it. I don't have to think about head coach. Right. So this whole idea of like, oh man, you should have had something, you know, a plan B. It's like, no,
Plan B's are good when you really need a plan B, but this is not a time when you needed a plan B.
Ask Juan Soto Jr. who doesn't exist because of a good plan B. The other part,
That's highbrow.
That's there you go. Am I getting there? He blew the rest of the season, putting Rich Bisaccia in as interim coach. I still think he makes perfect sense in that situation. Like you don't want to pull your offensive coordinator off of offensive coordinator. You don't want to pull your defensive coordinator off of defensive coordinator. Rich Bisaccia has been in the league 50 years. He's not going to come in with a power trip and try to change everything. He's been like, okay, let's not drastically alter what's happening here. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is going to turn into like a destruction of Rich Bisaccia's career. I mean, he'll still have jobs, right? But he got thrown into such a terrible situation, didn't handle it great, and is going to look proportionally worse from it all. I mean, it's going to be a weird kind of. It should be a time when he looks back and says, like, when he's retired and he's got his grandkids on his lap, he should be like, I was an NFL head coach for, you know, 3/4 of the season. Like, it was awesome. Like, I got to live a dream that a million coaches all over this country wish they could do, you know, a job that, you know, almost every red-blooded American man says he can do better, including you and I, right? Like, I actually did it. I actually got to do it and put my balls on the chopping block. And when I was right, I was right. And when I was wrong, I was wrong. But I think this whole party's going to look back and be like, that was a clusterfuck. That sucked.
Well, yeah. I think the thing that we have to focus on is he didn't do a good job. Mm-hmm. And I think that the idea of bringing elevating, let's say, a special teams coach or a peripheral coach to head coach was good. It just so happens that it was Rich Bisaccia who seems like he was a lot more focused on if the team is okay, as opposed to getting them focused to win games.
Yeah. He was still watching himself, right? Like
that scoreboard watching comment. Just I don't care to hear his name anymore. Well, once I heard that, I'm like, dude, you don't want to win games, so I'm done with you.
Does Mark Davis keep him as special teams coach next season?
It's not up to him. It's up to the head coach.
Well, it could be up to Mark. I mean, if Mark says keep him, right?
If that happens,
whoever the decision maker is next season, do you keep Rich Bisaccia as a special teams coach?
No.
No?
Because, look.
Do you think he can't be a good special teams coach after being a bad interim head coach? Because you got to admit, he was stuck in a very tough situation. Like a really, it would have been really, really hard to look like a really good coach in that situation. Now, we can point to plenty of things he did incorrectly that he could have done better, but it was a rough situation.
Yeah, but the thing is the mindset is what he could have done better. How he conveyed what was important could have been done better, and that's what people are going to grasp onto. Is okay, look, he wasn't worried about winning games, and they didn't win very many games. That's not good if you want a head coach. Like, he can tell us all he wants, his game plan and what he wants to do and this and that and blah, blah, blah. But at the end of the day, this is what he did, and this is what he said he was most concerned with. And though they actually matched up. So what he said he was concerned with matched up with his team's production. And that's not what I want in my football team. I want a guy who wants to win. I want a guy who's focused on winning. I want a guy who's scoreboard watching.
Well, the scoreboard on Saturday, according to the odds makers, it should be pretty close. The Browns were 6-point favorites before this whole COVID thing hit. Now they're 1-point favorites, and who only knows what's going to be moving forward. So, hey, I'll take wins any way I can get it, even if it's just with like a decrepit Browns team that can't breathe. I'll take it on a Saturday all day long.
Well, let me give you a little bit of insight here on betting. When the road team usually is -3. So whatever you see, it's -3. So Vegas is actually in a neutral site.
Well, home team. Home team's -3.
I'm sorry. Yeah, you're right. Like the casinos think that on a neutral site with the players who are going to play, the Raiders should win by 2 points. But since the Browns are at home, they get 3 points for that. Now they're -1.
Until Saturday rolls around.
Knock on wood if you're with me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Autumn Windbags. We really appreciate it. Make sure you give us a follow on YouTube. A lot of bonus content on there. Plus, you get to see our ugly mugs, which is always fun. Until next time. Later.